Working Class Majority. Rick Smith.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. So again, Friday, you have this judge in Texas, another ideologue, who has decided that, well, since the Republicans had the vision and forethought to end the penalty for not getting insurance, ultimately the tax, then without the tax, it's unconstitutional. And there's part of me that, you know, the part of me that sees this as a political game that says, you know what, maybe it's what we need. Maybe we need to see it go away. We need mass pain and suffering to get people, you know, just beyond ticked off. But then there's the other part of me that says, you know what, people are going to die. And that's not being hyperbolic. And I guess that's where the right and the left differ. The right, they don't care. I still do. And at the end of it, the person who may die, me, but maybe me or you. And here to share some thoughts on the, well, the horrible decision from Friday. I've asked our good friend Peter Morley to come talk with us, patient advocate, cancer survivor, lupus warrior, and, well, a good friend of the show. Peter, thanks for taking time for us.
Thank you, Rick. I don't know how I feel about that introduction with the dying part, because, you know, I'm sorry, I'm making a really bad joke.
No, look, at the end of this, this is the real life reality of this judge's decision.
No, absolutely. And you know, you and I've come on your show several times now, and I think we've spoken about this case because this case has been going on. It was introduced in February, the beginning of February, and it was heard in, you know, I advocated throughout the summer, you know, against it with Senator Schumer and other senators and my Congresswoman, Carolyn Maloney, but it was heard in September. We didn't hear one word from it. I mean, I was in D.C. in September and, you know, advocating against it, you know, in GOP offices. And I was just in D.C. last Monday and Tuesday, and every office was like, we're going to hear about it. Like, that's all they've been hearing for months, any day now. There was absolutely no, from the hearing in September until Friday, there was absolutely no, like, it was total silence on this.
Speculatively, it's like my monopsony.
Thank you. That it was going to happen. Well, first they thought it was going to happen after the midterms, which was everybody originally thought, because, you know, especially with, you know, taking with the Democrats taking back the House. But then the thought was it was going to happen after open enrollment. What happened on Friday, just to put everything in perspective, when you talk about the Affordable Care Act and, you know, the open enrollment period ended on Saturday. This was announced on Friday. And, you know, this is essentially a mob hit, because last year, for instance, almost 10% of the open enrollment signups for the Affordable Care Act happened in the last 24 hours. So to release this information on a, you know, on a Friday, like late afternoon, early evening into Saturday, I mean, you just, like, there was like panic. I mean,
so you think this was done on purpose? You don't think it was just a matter of bad timing? You think there was malice and forethought behind this?
I don't see how you could think anything differently. Honestly, yes, I feel it was deliberate. It was. I mean, we've seen so much sabotage over the last, you know, year or 2 years through executive orders to undermine the act. Because, you know, Senators Alexander and Murray were very close to, you know, working on something together. And they were very, you know, which would enhance, you know, I mean, the Affordable Care Act is not perfect. We both agree on that. I'm sure all Americans agree on that, including Congress. However, it is the law of the land. It is something that is our foundation that we could enhance and improve and make better and bring premiums down and drug costs down and other wonderful things. But, you know, we have to work together to do that.
Keyword could.
Yeah, right. Good. Right.
If there was the will. And look, you know, I had talked about this right when the ACA passed. You know, what the Republicans learned is they learned from Medicare. Medicare was first passed, it wasn't great. I mean, it didn't cover an awful lot, didn't cover many people. But over time, they tweaked it and they expanded it to the point now where if you threaten to take Medicare away from an old lady, she's going to beat you with her cane.
Right. No, listen, I'll be somebody with my cane if they're going to take the ACA away. So, I mean, you know.
As you should. No, I mean, this is how passionately we need to be over this stuff.
Right.
You know, I go back to and I'll never forget this woman from ADAPT. I don't know if you've heard of the group ADAPT.
Of course.
But, you know, she made it to the state capitol here in Pennsylvania in her wheelchair. And she said, look, the funding cuts that Governor Corbett at the time was proposing were literally going to kill her, she believed.
Right.
And she said, look, if I'm going to die, you're going to watch me die right here in this hallway. Mm. I'm not going anywhere. And these are the kind of things that we need to be doing. We need to be pushing for that kind of that passion and make these people accountable for the stuff that they do.
Absolutely. I mean, I say this a lot. I say this a lot on social media, and I say this a lot in the meetings that I've taken in Congress. You know, we should never stop being outraged over things like, you know, ACA sabotage or just any of the horrendous decisions that this administration has made, because it's not like, oh, it's just another act of evil. No, it's a new act of evil, and it's outrageous. That's you're absolutely right, and there should be a strong response to this. I mean, the thought is, honestly, you know, speaking with these, I've had 21 meetings, and I'm so sorry I lost track, over, you know, last Monday and Tuesday. And, you know, this time was very intense because I met with actual, you know, like 7 legislators in, you know, over 2 days. And it was...
Yeah, I was following it. It was fantastic what you were able to do. And I forget who you went down with I forget his name.
Red Raccoon?
Yeah.
Yes. He, and for those who aren't familiar, the few that aren't familiar with him, he is a veterans advocate. And he went off on some of his own meetings. So we were really really taking the Capitol by storm. So he went to advocate because there are a lot of things that are going on with veterans as a whole. You could do a whole show on that. You should probably have him on your show to talk about that.
Well, we've had him on a number of times over the last couple of months. I will most certainly reach out to him again. So what was the response that you got from these folks? Because, look, at the end of it, you know, you could just wring your hands and go, well, you know, it is what it is. What's the response?
I'll make it very personal for you. You know, one of the people that I met with was your senator, Bob Casey, and he was very kind in the sense, 25 minutes with me, talking about, you know, what his plans were. And very interesting thing that he told me, you know, first of all, he did a wonderful thing this summer. He held, healthcare town halls throughout Pennsylvania with, healthcare advocates, of all different, you know, from patient advocates to, healthcare professional advocates, just all different types of organizations, really like going throughout. He like did like a whole tour of the whole state of Pennsylvania, did wonderful, wonderful things. But the one thing he said to me that I totally agree with, that totally clicked with me, is I've never called the Affordable Care Act Obamacare, because you know what that does? It politicizes it. And healthcare is not a political thing. Healthcare is a human right. It is not a privilege. That's what I believe. But, you know, him saying that was just, it's just a moment, just to hear that out loud was very, resonated very deeply with me.
That's interesting. It's where I say, you know, you don't give up the political ground. You depoliticize it. I can see how that would, because you look at the fact that, you know, when you call it single payer, people are, no, but you call it Medicare for all, you know, people are a little more receptive. And look, I'm all in favor of both.
Right. No, I think, as somebody who lives with chronic illness, you know, the mind trick that I play on myself is that, you know, I stay in the moment. I think of the present, because if I think about what I have to do tomorrow, like, you know, that would be completely overwhelming and might send me into a panic attack. But, you know, I think of what I need to accomplish right now. And right now with healthcare is we need to strengthen the Affordable Care Act. And I actually, as you were following me on, you know, my trip, and one of the people that I finally met face to face, and I've worked an incredible amount with her office. I've also, speaking of Patty Murray, but I've also worked with Senator Lamar Alexander, who just announced his retirement today after he finishes his term. And I've actually found his office incredibly helpful to work with, as I've mentioned many times to you. But Patty Murray did tell me that, you know, it is her desire to strengthen and enhance the Affordable Care Act, and that is what is, you know, her top priorities, that and lowering drug prices and lowering premiums. Now, you know, we have a new Senate. You know, we're going to have to, I think the biggest priority right now is defining who are going to be our allies in that new Senate, because, you know, we have a Democratic House now, but we don't have a Democratic Senate. So we're going to have to find out who we can reach across the aisle with. Now, I had my first meeting ever with Senator Murkowski's office. That was a great meeting. And I found out a lot of interesting things, which I'm not going to get into here. It's not really pertinent to what we're talking about. But the thing is, you know, we don't have John McCain anymore. We can't trust Susan Collins. So who can we trust now? We're going to have to find new people. I don't know if any of the new people coming in are going to be people that are going to be allies, but that is going to be the important thing, because you know what? The legislation that comes out of the House is going to be more progressive. It's going to be more aggressive, and we're going to have to find a way to get it through the Senate. And, you know, we have to work together. That's the only way that we're going to improve healthcare.
No.
There can't be an us versus them. There has to be a mutual ground that we have to meet at. And, you know, there are people out there that are suffering greatly that I hear from every single day. And, you know, sometimes it keeps me up at night, because their stories are much, much worse than my stories. And these are people that can't even get access to healthcare. And those are the people that I think of when I'm in D.C. that energize me and get me through those, you know, 20, 21, whatever meetings I have. Those are the people that I hold close to in my heart, because they're the people that need it more than anyone.
No, I mean, I follow you, and I think what you're doing is incredible, especially given the challenges that you have personally, that your health problems as well. I just think you're incredible. But you hit something there a second ago that you know, I've been saying for a while, you know, this us and them mentality. And, you know, one of the things that our healthcare industry has done masterfully is they've segmented it and pitted groups against one another. We have such a bizarre system, or if you can call it a system, to where, you know, all of the most profitable people are in the private industry, and, you know, the sick and the elderly and, you know, the disabled all seem to be on government programs. And it seems like, you know, they use those to leverage against one or the other, which is why, again, I think having one system, one pot, one pool, however it looks, but everybody's in it, so that you can't, you know, scare seniors with going, oh, if you let those working people in, it's going to take away from you. I think that's the way we have to be looking. And I know I like the idea. Okay, we're going to strengthen the ACA. We're going to move that forward. But I'm still in the mindset we need to have one giant pool. Everybody in, that's it.
Well, you know, I agree with you with that. I think that should be the end goal. But I think to get there, I think the first step is to strengthen what we have right now and to build on that, to make that our foundation, build on top of that, and head towards that direction, because I agree that's where we should end up, where everybody in the United States has the same healthcare access, because that's what, you know, we, listen, I was in D.C. on July 27, 2017, the day of the Voterama. I remember that day very well. I remember healthcare was hanging by a thread. And my goal is to never see us go back to that place again. But to go forward, we got to move. I mean, we have to accept the fact that it's not going to happen overnight, but it will happen. And I think that's where a lot of people differ. And, you know, the truth is we have to do this right, because, you know, we can't leave a healthcare system that's vulnerable again, like, you know, the Affordable Care Act, where you can, you know, where it's constantly under attack and constantly being repealed instead of, you know, enhancing. I mean, we've been attacked the last 2 years and assaulted the last 2 years and beaten up, and we're in a worse place because of it.
Yeah, I would argue that not just the last 2 years, but the last eight.
Probably, but I would think that the assaults have been, you know, because of the executive orders.
Because of all the time we could have been increasing and making things better, the Republicans gridlocked and blocked and, you know, what, 100 repeal and repeal votes. Just it's insane where we could have been using that energy to make it better. They were figuring out how to tear it down. So how do you get, I mean, one of the things I love about you is you're extraordinarily positive about that thing, something can get done. As where I guess maybe I'm just a little jaded. I don't ever see the Republicans ever coming around and supporting the ACA or something like it. I just don't. They have to pander to the seniors over Medicare, but I just don't ever see them coming around.
I think there are, that's a really tough question.
Or is it?
Answer.
Or do you think this is just a leadership problem then? Do you think individual senators and representatives are like, hey, we got to do something? Because I've heard this argument as well, that, you know, in the cloakroom, you know, they'd support, you know, they go even as far as to support single payer. But, you know, the leadership and the money, they're the ones who hold them back. Is that the problem, or is it just ideologically the Republican Party is opposed to it?
No, I don't think it's the Republicans. I mean, I think you're right. I think it is the leadership, and it is, I mean, I've met with GOP offices that are definitely more compassionate than others. There's definitely we've spoken about this before. There's a different energy in the offices of the Democratic versus GOP office. But the thing is, you know, you have to take those meetings with the GOP people or legislators, rather. You know, I get questioned all the time, or, you know, like if I do a call to action on Twitter and I say, you know, you need to call your senators, and, you know, I hear, you know, from people who have Republican senators, oh, well, I'm not going to bother my, my senator doesn't care. But you know what? What I heard last week was, if you have 500 calls, you know, to an office, that's going to warrant a response. So, you know, I would never dissuade anyone from calling. And then I hear the same argument from, like, you know, a state like myself that has two Democratic senators who, of course, you know, support the ACA and pre-existing conditions. Well, you know, you don't have to call them to ask them to support it, but you can call them to thank them to support it, because, again, that warrants a response as well. And that's something that, you know, you can talk about the volume of calls. And
right.
You go back to last year, too, when the volume of calls is the thing that saved the Affordable Care Act. And it's, you know, it's not that it needs saving at this point, because this is all up to the judicial system right now. But, you know, going forward, this is how we have to work together. We have to use our voices. We have to tell them what we need. And this isn't only on a federal level. I mean, today my governor had a summit where he announced a very progressive, which really, to be quite honest, shocked me how progressive it was. And one of the things, and, you know, bringing it back to healthcare, that he is going to do is he's going to make it for instill in New York or pass a law that's saying no matter what happens on the federal level, pre-existing conditions in New York State will always be protected. Now, that's something that you can advocate for with every single one of your governors, even though two of those governors were on that, are on this lawsuit, by the way. But still, this is something that you could do at the local level. It's not only about, you know, the Senate and the House, as you know. It's also local. So, you know, there's so many things we can do, but, you know, doing nothing or, you know, spinning our wheels or, you know, shouting expletives at our legislators, you know, it may feel good momentarily, you know, but, you know, in the long run, doesn't get you very far. So I try to stay focused. I try to, you know, represent the people who need to be heard. And I try to keep working with these legislators and include the GOP legislators. And, you know, that's what I'm going to continue to do, Rick, is for as long as I can, as long as my health will allow me to do.
Good on you, Peter. And thank you for doing what you're doing. Good on you. You know, it's such an important issue. And I'm glad you've taken a little time to share some of your stuff with us. And I look forward to hearing more about, you know, how we're going to keep fighting for this.
Thank you. And listen, you know, thank you for everything that you do. And I am a huge supporter of your work, and I appreciate you giving me a voice to be able to share this with everyone out there that's listening. So I thank you so much, Rick.
Good stuff, Peter. Appreciate it. Good luck, and I hope you have a good holiday.
Thank you. You do the same.
Thanks so much. Our good friend Peter Morley. Make sure you follow him on Twitter, one of my favorite follows. You know, just incredible work he does. Let's take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
Own 90% of the wealth. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth. Where do you fit in? Take a look at yourself. 10% of the people. Own 90% of the wealth.